Hello, everyone.
Welcome to another episode of the iPhone Podcast. This is episode 26. I'm your host, Gary Ng, alongside Justin Louie. How are you doing, Justin?
Very good. It's rumor week, so let's get to it.
All right. First things first, we have a very, very juicy iPad rumor to talk about. The rumor was started by John Gruber, and he suspects that Apple will be releasing two versions of the iPad in 1 year. So potentially we'll see a refresh to the iPad coming in fall as scheduled, and possibly, in the spring, and possibly in the fall, seeing an iPad 3 come along. Why would Apple do this? Well, Gruber feels that this is part of Apple sort of replacing the traditional September iPod announcement, since the iPod in itself is dead.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say dead, but certainly dying. This is one of those things. I knew we would be in full iPad 2 rumor mode, but I wasn't quite expecting iPad 3. And everybody's just running wild with this story. I don't think there's actually anything in the rumor to it. Like, I mean, this could happen, but there doesn't seem to be any real smoking gun. It's all just based on something Gruber said, and I don't even think he's really completely followed it up. So I don't know if he just let something slip or it's just a little prediction. But it would, on the other hand, I do think it would kind of make sense. They launched it last spring. They had no idea what they had on their hands. I'm sure they expected a certain level of success, but I don't think even Apple imagined that it would turn out to be this. So it would definitely make sense to have your flagship product be announced September and out for the Christmas season. So I wouldn't at all be surprised if this happened, but at this point I'm not going to say for sure. It's not like there's any smoking gun in that rumor so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be very aggressive for Apple to release two iPads in 1 year. I mean, just to invest in one iPad is a lot of money enough. But to come up with something that will get people to update their iPads that are just over a year old, it would have to be something that's absolutely spectacular.
Well, there's two ways to look at that. They've always sort of done the iPhone once a year. I think the iPods have turned into once a year. I think they may have been a little more often back in the day, but maybe not. But then their computers, they update anywhere from once a year till three or four times a year. There's been times where the MacBook has had kind of minor refreshes all the time. So if you look at the iPad as more of a computer, I don't think it's outrageous to do that. And certainly we see all their competitors. Android has new phones and new tablets coming out every couple weeks. The tablets haven't really started coming out yet, but they're all rumored to be, and the phones come out every few weeks. So if Apple wanted to do, say, a couple iPads a year, I don't think that is out of the question. Or maybe they'll just do a minor update now for some people who are sort of holding off, and then have a major change and have that this September. That wouldn't shock me. But I would say, just totally off topic, people ask me all the time, I need a computer. Should I go out and buy an iMac, or should I go buy a MacBook Pro, or should I buy an iPad? And they're always wondering if something new is coming out. My advice has always been, if you want it, like, I mean, maybe don't buy one a week before WWDC or don't buy an iPod in August when you know the thing's coming in September. Don't buy an iPhone in May. But usually, if you're interested in the product, just get it. There's always something new around the corner. If you wait, you're always going to be waiting. And the beautiful thing about Apple products is you could buy an iPad today. You could run down to Best Buy. I think they're $499 or $449, $549 Canadian. And you could probably sell it a month from now when the new one comes out for $50, $100 less than you paid. The resale value on Apple stuff is great. So don't ever hold off just because something is just around the corner. That's my little bit of advice on Apple products.
Yeah, I think that goes towards anything. You always have some friends who are like, oh, I'm going to wait for the next one to come out. You end up waiting forever and not having anything to use.
Exactly.
Okay, let's move on to the next rumor. These rumors are just nonstop right now. This one involves the second generation Apple TV. And Gadget reports that they got a tip from some anonymous tipster that iOS 4.3 beta, which is already out for developers, has some code that suggests Apple could be taking on a traditional gaming console. that you play on your TV. People think that, you know, could Angry Birds be coming to the Apple TV and being controlled from your iPhone?
I don't know that there's anything in that rumor that really jumps out at me as being, oh, this is for sure. They just haven't been able to keep the secret. But it makes total sense. I said from the first moment Apple TV was launched, it should have the games built in. It's just a natural. It has great games. The price is right for those games. And we all know that consoles maybe aren't quite what they used to be. They're under threat from the mobile gaming, but I think people would still love to play something like Angry Birds or Plants vs. Zombies or whatever you have on their TV. And if they can incorporate that in to the iPhones and the iPod Touches and the iPads as the controller, then you kind of have the best of both worlds. I think Angry Birds makes the most sense to control it that way, but then imagine Angry Birds as a party type game sitting at home on your 50-inch TV with a bunch of people around. That could be pretty fun, and the price is right. So I would be shocked if we don't see this sometime in the very near future. I think most people thought when the Apple TV was announced that we'd see more of this. I expect this year to be big for Apple TV. I think you'll see games, and I think you'll see a lot more video content. I think you'll see Major League Baseball and Hulu and all the different things come to Apple TV.
Yeah, Apple TV right now, it's still considered a hobby by Apple. There are a couple hacks out there that people can get, such as AirFlick by Erica Sadun. AirFlick lets you stream any video or image straight to your Apple TV from your Mac, and there's no need to hack anything. It just works. So that's something that people can try to test out. I've tested it out. It's pretty simple. But let's move on to the next story here. This research firm IHS iSupply, they did a teardown of the iPhone 4, and they revealed that obviously the Verizon iPhone 4 costs less than the original iPhone 4 to make. It's been almost a year now. The cost of a Verizon iPhone 4 is $171.35, down from $187.51. And to add to that, people are getting all up in a tiffy because the Verizon iPhone 4 lineups are not as huge as the original iPhone, obviously because this is for a phone that's a year old, and there were about 500,000 pre-orders on the first day.
There's two things there. Far as the price goes, that's just basic economics. The price is obviously going to go down on those components, especially the volume Apple's buying them in. As far as the Verizon this morning, I'm sure maybe Apple and Verizon are a little disappointed because you like to have that spectacle of the line, but really it's just common sense. People have very short memories. It's been pre-ordering for existing customers for a week. Then FedEx or whoever it was shipped them out early. So people have been getting Verizon iPhones all week. Like you said, it is a phone that's going on a year old. And then there's the fact that we only saw huge lines for the iPhone 4 in Canada because we couldn't pre-order the same way. The iPhone 4 lines weren't enormous last year. And even the reason they were is because Apple had it go on sale and the ability to pick up the pre-orders right at the same time. Today, they had the pre-orders come in early, and they had people could pick them up today at noon to try to stagger it. So you're not going to see those lines around the block for a phone that's that old and that people have had access to all week. So I'm sure we're going to see an announcement within days, if not weeks, talking about the huge sales on Verizon. So there's nothing to worry about as far as that goes. But I guess it's an interesting story for people looking to knock Apple down a peg.
Yeah. Now, here's a huge rumor that was just reported this afternoon by Bloomberg. They had a source reveal to them that Apple is actually working on a smaller and cheaper iPhone models to compete directly with Android. Rumors include a $200 unlocked device that will have multiple band capabilities. I don't know. I mean, this is huge. I don't see how Bloomberg can just go out there and just say this. Apparently, this, you know, smaller, cheaper device will be out there to compete with other mid-range phones. But, you know, this sort of contradicts Apple's vision of trying to be that high-end smartphone seller and not trying to compete with, you know, the cheap, dumb phones out there. But this, you know, for a $200 price point, you could see this as what, if it was real, I mean, people are talking about bringing back the rumors of the iPhone Nano. I mean, what do you think? The HP released plans for, I think it was the Veer, which was out yesterday, and that looks like a cute little phone that runs Palm's WebOS. It'd be interesting to see if Apple would ever decide to branch out and make a smaller phone that's a bit cheaper than an unsubsidized iPhone 4.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like a broken record on these rumors, but again, I don't see any real substance in the rumor. There's nobody, it doesn't matter if it's Bloomberg, Wall Street Journal, they've all got it wrong so many times. Everybody's just out on a limb with these Apple rumors. We've heard this rumor before, but again, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. But what I find interesting is we just are a few weeks away from Apple announcing that they control 2% of the overall market or 4%, whatever it was, and had 50% of the market. So I don't think Apple's really sweating these cheaper phones, and it's never been their business model to try to compete in the lower end markets. So, and again, I don't think they want to put out a compelling product at $200 that possibly cannibalizes things like the iPad or the iPhone. So I'm not sure about this, but again, the iPod Touch is damn close to that price. So maybe it makes sense to have whatever you call it, an iPhone Nano, something that just maybe doesn't have as good a camera, doesn't smaller, slightly smaller screen. And again, I won't be shocked to see it, but it's not really in line with what Apple does. The thing that I think, I'll start a new rumor myself that I haven't heard anyone say, but I'm waiting for the day, will we see a 3G chip built into the iPod Touch? Because we've seen that with the iPad now. Can you imagine people who don't really need phone in a big way? The iPod Touch is already a pretty amazing device at that price. Throw in 3G and, say, be able to go to Rogers and get a $30 6 gig plan and then have always-on data on that device. That's, to me, that's where Apple should be looking to go. That would be a killer.
Actually, when you think about it, having an iPod Touch with 3G capabilities would be great, but I think that would hit jump into iPhone sales, because right now most iPhone users alone, they barely talk on the phone. Everyone's sending text messages, everyone's sending emails. A lot of the functions are just, you know, using data. So it would be very, very interesting to see that happen. And if it did happen, I think it would sell like hotcakes, but I bet someone would be able to hack it to turn it into a phone. So that'd be very interesting. Let's move on to this next sort of story here. There's a little article here that says, are Apple's iAds in trouble? Some insiders apparently told Mobile Crunch that the iAd service isn't doing quite as well as Apple had hoped. But I mean, I think iAd right now, it's still in a testing phase. It's not really everywhere. It's not as popular as I thought it would be, but for it to be in trouble, I think that's too early to make a conclusion like that.
I don't even know where to start. A, it can't be in trouble. It's funded by Apple. It didn't cost them a lot of money up front, and these are million-dollar ad campaigns. So what people don't realize is if you're running an app and you want to put advertising, you can go to Apple, and their cheapest ad buy is $1 million, or you can go to AdSense or AdMob, and you and I could run an ad for $5. Like, they're two very different worlds. And if you read that TechCrunch article, which I did, I sometimes just skim them, but this one piqued my interest and I dug into it a little deeper. Their reason for saying it's in trouble is that it's undersold. They're not sold out. Well, again, $1 million is not just some cheap and easy buy-in. Plus, we've heard all the stories about Steve Jobs and Apple people rejecting certain ads because they didn't look good enough or weren't good enough for Apple standards. But the other part of the article said that developers and companies have both said that it works well, that people are getting results from. And that's the bottom line. The ads work well. You don't get taken out of the app. It's a good concept. So even if Apple does have to lower the barrier of entry and get those prices down a little bit, I don't think it's in trouble by any means. The key to success, if it's working, people will find a way to work it. It's like we always discuss ad nauseum every single week about the big media companies doing this. There's just going to be a matter of time where they're going to realize, hey, maybe spending millions of dollars on a 30-second Super Bowl spot doesn't make as much sense as having this iAd where somebody's playing Angry Birds 20 hours a week and can see our ad every week. That might make a little more sense to spend $1 million for that. So I think it's iAds is just fine. It's just these are the growing pains. When you set $1 million barrier to entry, you're going to have some slow adoption at first.
Oh, definitely. I mean, obviously, Apple is trying to attract high-end advertisers and not, the tire kickers, quote-unquote, to enter the iAd market. But it'll be interesting to see, more advertisers come through. I know there was a campaign by Campbell's Soup, and I think they had an iAd, and apparently people remember the iAd more than a TV commercial, was it? Was that right?
I can't remember. I didn't hear that story. I my limited experience with iAds is I really like them, but we don't see them in Canada. I think they must be geo-targeted, and most of the companies don't want impressions going to Canada, because I download apps all the time that say supported by iAds, and then I just never see the ads. So,
guess it's a benefit to us in Canada, less ads.
It is. It is a benefit, except for when I'm actually wanting to see them.
Yeah, yeah. How funny is that? Next story here. This one has to do with, it's about one of Justin's favorite companies of all time, Rogers Wireless here in Canada. They've actually launched a new data sharing option for customers that will let you share your existing 6 gigabyte data plan, which is $30 a month. It was a promotion by Rogers. The new plan says, if you want to share this data plan with another device, it will cost you $30 extra per month per device. So basically, you have the plan that you're already paying for, the 6 gigabyte plan for $30, and you want to share it with your iPad, you'll need to pay $30 more per month to share this plan, but you won't get any more data. People have been absolutely livid about this idea. When we broke this story, there's been almost 100 comments. I've seen the Rogers social media team take a lot of heat from customers online. I don't know what Rogers is thinking to charge the exact same amount for to share a plan that we're already paying for. It just boggles my mind. I mean, if this was $5, like something reasonable, that would be worth it. But to charge $30 again, no comment. Just wow. Just wow.
I'm taking deep breaths. I'm doing my meditating exercises here. I'm actually not going to go on a huge rant, because it's so dumb. It has to be a mistake. And I don't know if it's out yet, but the only reason this interests me in any way is the new hotspot feature that's coming to iPhones. Sounds awesome, and I expect that to be free. So if this has to do with that, then there's going to be hell to pay. I always get emails every time I mention Rogers, because I always say these crazy things like, anything I've ever said in my life, I've never got more comments than when I said, Rogers, I will sign a lifetime contract if you do this. And I feel the same way about this. I will keep paying you guys the ridiculous amounts of money that I do. I will keep buying an iPhone from you every single year. I will sign up for life, as I've said, but I expect new features when they come to my phone to be free. And for some unknown reason, if you're going to be idiots and charge me to share data that I've already paid for with another device, then you sure as hell better be adding more data. So I can go buy an iPad data plan for $30 for 6 gigs, but it's 30 just to share it, and I don't get it. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't even make sense. I don't even know what they're getting at. I'm paying $30 for 6 gigs and another 30 to share that same 6 gigs. It doesn't even make any sense whatsoever. So the hotspot feature should be out in the next few weeks. let's see what happens when it comes on and if it works for free. And if it doesn't, then I think we all have no choice but to go UBB on Rogers, start a petition. And if not, I commit to everybody listening right now, I will dig up every article, every how-to thing to show you how to hack this thing to get it for free or to jailbreak or to do something, because Rogers cannot possibly think they're going to charge me $30 to share a plan that I'm already overpaying for.
A lot of the comparisons to this idea to charge you just to share your plan, it's kind of like ordering a pizza from Domino's and Domino's charging you the exact same price for the pizza that you just paid to have them slice it up. Someone also talked about, you know, electric companies don't charge you more when you decide to plug in more devices into the wall. It just doesn't make sense. And I really feel for the people who aren't as tech informed and they actually decide to pay for this because there is no other option. So I guess it's really buyer beware and to hope for the best that Rogers will not charge $30. But right now it seems like they're going ahead with this. There's a green light. They've confirmed that it does exist on Twitter. So yeah, it's out there.
The only silver lining is we saw with the UBB, we saw with the CRTC changing the rules last year to allow some foreign ownership in mobile. There's going to be more competition. And if these big guys like Rogers and Bell and TELUS keep pulling this nonsense, they're going to regret it in the end. Get it through your heads. Do what Netflix did. We're in a new world. You're not going to make the same revenues, but it doesn't mean you can't make revenues otherwhere. You're going to be the dumb pipe, whether you like it or not. You're not going to con us in. You're not going to try to force us into doing other things. Give me a fast, reliable network for a decent price. And I say decent, it doesn't have to be rock bottom. We're all kind of addicted to this always on connectivity. We're not going to give that up. So you can probably overcharge on that. But then you're not going to nickel and dime people with these stupid things like this, or we're just going to go elsewhere. Get smart. Give us, like I said, fast, reliable network at a reasonable price. And then I don't care if it's design apps, sell your content in different ways, find other revenue streams. You have us as customers. You surely can figure out a way to market other valuable things to us without just doing these scam type things like this.
Yeah, it's pretty much mind-boggling, like we've talked about, but let's move on. Now let's talk about some app news. Some notable updates this week. iBooks has been updated with some performance fixes and some bug fixes. Skype has been updated now to enable video chat with Skype TV enabled TV sets. One of my favorite apps right now that has just been released was Google Translate, which is pretty amazing. We'll talk a bit about that later. WhatsApp, one of my favorite messaging apps, it's been updated with group chat. Angry Birds Seasons has now been updated with Valentine's Day, their Valentine's Day edition. Angry Birds is like the new Super Mario Brothers. It's everywhere. And today, Yelp has been updated to allow reservations via OpenTable. And Path, the photo sharing app, has been updated as well. Well, these are a lot of updates here.
Yeah, the only one that I, well, two that I'll mention quickly about, it seems that Google releases a new native app every single week. And then they have that overall app, that just the Google app. I'm wondering if they're better off building some of those back in. Like, do we really want to have 12 Google apps? Or is that their way of slowly trying to take over our home screens? Like, that's the only thing I'd say there. I wish you could just kind of hit Google on your phone and then they could build like Latitude and Translate and some of these ones that make sense that could easily work within one app. I would like to see that. And then far as Path goes, I think that's an interesting update for this reason. If for those of you who don't know what Path is, it's the photo sharing app that came out a few months ago and it got all kinds of hype before it came out, because it's from one of the early guys in Facebook, and Kevin Rose is an investor, and all these guys in the tech industry had been using it for a year.
Sean Parker from
Napster. And they were smart. They had all these sort of tech celebrities using it for the last year, and people, they would mention it, or they would say things on Twitter or show their app screens. And because, I mean, it was just a really good viral kind of marketing technique. And then it came out and basically everybody hated it because it was this private social network. So you're limited to 50 friends, which I have no problem with. I actually find that intriguing and actually think that's the neat idea. But then you couldn't share pictures that weren't in your camera roll. You had to take a picture live. You couldn't comment. You couldn't share with a certain person. But the app in itself is really beautiful design. The icon alone, you almost want to have it on your screen because it's one of the best looking icons. So this new update has allowed comments. But what's awesome about them is they're the best comments I've ever seen. They're real-time comments. You comment on someone's thing, and if they're typing, you can see it right on your screen. You get it instantly. So it'll be interesting to see if this can make a comeback at all, because now everyone's switched to things like Instagram and PicPlease and sort of forgotten about this. So I'll find it interesting if people go back to it. I really like it. I think personally, people should replace their MMS with this. If you're paying extra to Rogers or whoever, cancel MMS and then just send this, because then you have a nice track record. You have this nice interface. It's all backed up online. You can comment. The other nice feature is you can share it with people who aren't using the app. So you can just put in people from your contact book and they'll get it through email. So I really like it. Now it's just a matter of, will anyone actually use it? Because I know everyone I got to initially signed up for it pretty much just got rid of it off their phone because it was so limited. I don't know why they made some of those early decisions, but they're really listening to customers now and it's really working well. So let's see if they can make a comeback. But if you haven't tried it, I recommend trying it. And if you tried it early on and were underwhelmed but want a way to kind of share, say, pictures with people and not go wide on Facebook and Twitter, it's more private moments for you and your close friends or family, then I think it's definitely worth trying. And it's free.
Yeah, I mean, I remember signing up for Path and it's on my phone. I rarely use it. You do need to go through a bit of a setup process, like you mentioned. It forces you to take 3 pictures right away and you have to do that. It's different. It definitely is different. I've been using Instagram, although the Instagram bug in me has sort of kind of faded a bit. It's really hard to constantly keep using the same app, but the interface of Path is nice. But it just comes down to, how do I get my friends to use this? Just once again, nagging friends to download the latest app or inviting them. It just gets to a point where it's like, when does this end? It's never going to end. We're going to have unlimited apps forever.
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing, because I really think there's a market for this, but I don't. There's so many apps doing it, and then certain people like certain things. If they need, I don't know if they need to open an API and you just could use some kind of open system and use the app. But to me, I don't know about you, but I do send a lot of pictures. I find that people, now that you have even MMS on the phone, I mean, you're eating something interesting or you see a funny sign. And then a lot of times when you just do it on a text message, maybe you clear your text messages, maybe you delete them. I think it'd be pretty cool to have one app to rule them all. That was like the built-in Apple messaging app, but that everybody could use and everybody could use freely and not have to pay their carrier. And just every time you sent a message to somebody or sent a link to someone or sent a picture, you had this nice timeline that was really easy to use and go back and find old stuff. But as you said, we're all trying different things. Maybe you like Instagram because of the filters. Maybe you hate Instagram because of the filters. And then with 20 apps, you never have more than a couple people you know on each one, because everybody's spread out on all these different apps. So it's cool that we get all these choices, but you would like to see maybe some kind of open platform or something to try to deal with this problem. The first company that figures that out will be the big winner, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it always comes down to, you know, oh, this app needs Facebook integration because Facebook dominates anything that has to do with sharing with friends. But about a native chat app or some sort of social app, I really feel that Apple is going to unleash something like that. People have talked about, you know, potentially getting an iChat for iOS. We already have FaceTime. It would make sense to add in chat. For Apple, you know, if they preview iOS 5, that should be upcoming, for them to drop something such as an iChat for iOS, I think that would be huge, because the hardest part about getting a friend to use an app is to is to getting them to download it. But if the app is already installed natively, such as a native chat app from Apple, it'd be a no-brainer to be able to send free messages and send pictures, make calendar dates, whatever. But Apple really does need to come up with some sort of native chat app. They tend to wait a bit longer to refine things, or they release it when they feel that, you know, their lead or their innovation is being threatened. So I don't think anything out there. I think they need to release it soon. And I have a feeling it could be coming this year.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a possibility. And if Apple did it, it would be close to what I was talking about. The only slight negative would be it would probably cut out all the people not using Apple products. But for me personally, almost everyone I know does use some type of Apple product, so it wouldn't be an issue for me. So we'll see what happens. But I do think we'll see some type of iChat or social features built heavily into the new iOS when we see it in June.
It'd be like, you know, people always talking about, oh, it's, you know, BBM on my BlackBerry. I can talk to my BlackBerry friends. Well, but, you know, maybe Apple will come up with something like this to compete with BBM as well. Let's move on to, Angry Birds seasons. Do you play Angry Birds at all? I did manage to update Angry Birds seasons and try out the Valentine's edition. The levels are just like, you know, what you would expect from Angry Birds. Difficult at first, but if you stick to it, eventually you will pass the level with, you know, at least two or three stars. I think it's a great update, but my problem with Angry Birds is I never have enough time to play it.
Yeah, people probably think I'm an Angry Birds addict because I'm always adding the stories to the lineups and I've blogged about it several times, but I only have the original Angry Birds and I haven't even come close to beating that. It's something that every once in a while when I'm really bored on the phone, I try. It's a great game and I'm fascinated by all the business surrounding it, what these people were able to accomplish. I'm actually more interested in Angry Birds as a story than I am the actual game, so I haven't tried it, but all their success is well-deserved, and I just personally, in general, don't play that many games on my phone. I love the games, but if I got a few spare minutes on my phone, there's always something to do on Twitter or something to do with something else, so I don't tend to play a lot of games. But like I've said before, Angry Birds, it's their world right now when it comes to gaming. Everybody's desperate to try to catch a wave on their momentum.
Yeah, I mean, if I was Rovio and you are the hottest thing on the planet right now, obviously from a business point of view, you would definitely try to make as much money as you can, because I mean, when it comes to apps, it's easy for people to forget you. Just think about some of the earliest apps that came out on the iPhone or in the App Store. You know, some of those apps we don't even use anymore. We keep on looking for the next and greatest thing. But, kudos to the Angry Birds team for teaming up with Fox. They're coming up with a new Angry Birds version called Rio that will coincide with that new animated film that's coming out. So they've done well for themselves. They've done a great job of marketing. Not only that, it's the game. The game speaks for itself. People have enjoyed it, and it's crazy the amount of accessories you can buy now from Angry Birds and all sorts of, you know. Before it used to be iPhone cakes. Now you see like Angry Bird cakes. It's hilarious.
Yeah, you can even buy cases now. I couldn't believe that when I saw that at Future Shop a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, let's move on. App picks. I have a couple app picks here. First one I'm going to talk about, the app is called Precorder, and how it works is, let me just explain a situation. Let's say you want to record video on your iPhone 4, and someone is just about to do something really hilarious, or you're waiting for someone to, your cat to like fall asleep or something. And the problem with video is that once you click record, You're waiting. It finally happens and you have it on your video, but then you got to go back and you got to cut out the first minute and a half where there's nothing happening. Now with Precorder, what it does is when you launch the app, it's already recording before you press the record button. It creates sort of a buffer. So let's say I'm waiting for, you know, my cat to fall asleep. and I see its eyes finally close, and I click record, and then I finish taking my video. Pre-recorder will include the previous 5 to 10 seconds, so I no longer need to have these videos where I need to edit out the beginning because I was waiting for something to happen. You really have to try it out to see what it's all about, but it's a very interesting concept, and so far I've enjoyed the interface of the app. It's very simple, and yeah, so if you want to take videos and you're always, you know, looking for that action shot, definitely check out Precorder. I think the price is $1.99 in the App Store.
Yeah, I tried it too, and I couldn't. It's one of those apps that you're not sure you have a real need for, but as you said, how often have you sat and waited for something, or the opposite, you've pulled it out, and by the time you hit record and get it all set up, you've missed something. So it's one of those apps that I think if they keep improving on it and the interface gets good, and I think it exports to your camera roll at full quality and all those things now, as long as they nail all that, then you just almost have to replace your normal, put it on your spot on your phone where you normally use it and just use it each time, and then you get those seconds. I couldn't believe it, really. I didn't think it would work the way they said, and I just kept filming this one spot and then moving my phone and hitting record and being like, oh my gosh, it did get that part where I first it starts recording as soon as you hit on the icon, pretty much. So if that sounds interesting, I can verify that. I've tried it too, and it works really well. It's an impressive app. And again, how amazing that we have these little tools. That's something like nature documentarians use and have these expensive setups. And here now you can have it on your iPhone for $1.99. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. Yeah, the interface is not bad. To increase the buffer, you just hold your finger down on this sort of dial, and you can just dial in how many seconds you want, up to 10 seconds. So it is pretty neat. It's, if you don't understand this, it's, you really got to try it out to figure it out. It took me a while to sort of figure out, okay, so what do they want? So what does this app do? So that's Precorder. This next app that I'm going to push here, it's really silly and really stupid, but I think it's great. It's called Cuckoo. What it is it helps you keep track of time on your iPhone. Every hour or 30 minutes or 15 minutes, you can set a chime, such as an old school grandfather clock or a cuckoo bird clock or a church bell, you name it, you can set it. It's good if, you know, you are working at home or on a project and you want an alert when it's the top of the hour, because how many times have you sat down on your computer and you're working feverishly on a project or whatever you need to do online, and the next thing you know, hours have passed you by. Now with Cuckoo, you can have some sort of audible alert every hour. It runs in the background, super simple to set up. You can also set sort of a quiet time, so the times no longer go off at a certain period. It's free. I think it's neat. Give it a shot. Cuckoo.
Sounds cuckoo. No, sounds cool. I have a bunch of apps here, so I'll try to make them fairly quickly. It's a good week for some cool apps I've discovered. Some of these are actually holdovers. Every week I want to get to some of these things, and we seem to run out of time. One app that's really neat, if it's something you could use and it's free, it's called DraftPad. And the neat idea about DraftPad is it's basically something for you to jot down text really quickly. So, I mean, you have things like Simple Note and those type of apps, but they still involve sort of putting in a title and saving and syncing and different things. What this app aims to do is you just click on the icon and you go straight, no fooling around, no folders, no tagging, just a sheet of paper, and you type in whatever quick information you need, a phone number, an idea, a note, whatever it is. And then it has these things what are called assists. So then it has a little button up in the top left-hand corner, and it has a whole bunch of built-in assists, like email to a specific person, send this to a quick Twitter client, send this to Facebook, make a phone call with this number, make it send an email with this email address. And then what's really awesome about it is it allows you to create your own assist. So if there's certain apps you want, as long as the app has some type of URL scheme, which a lot of apps do now and more are being added all the time, you can do it. So how I use it is it's sort of like on my home dock. And then anytime I need to jot down text really quickly, I just get it into this app, and then I have a bunch of these assists. I have one that automatically emails to myself for a certain type of note, one that goes automatically in the to-do program I use, those type of things. So again, if you're someone who's really into sort of your workflow and getting information down quickly and then being able to organize it, it's a really cool idea, and it's free right now, so it's worth checking out. And it's another one of those apps that it kind of gets better and better the more you dig into it. When you see how advanced some of these assists are, you can have it automatically search Google. It's just almost unlimited what you can get this app to do once you've captured that text. So free, check it out if that sounds interesting. Another couple apps I'll mention is, if you remember a couple months ago, Gary and I talked about Uber Twitter, and we were kind of disappointed with the overall lack of features. I hate how it looks, and it still doesn't live up to its potential. But the one thing I loved about Uber Twitter was when links are in your timeline, you just tap them and you could go right to the article. So my new obsession with Twitter clients is to have that one-tap URL, and I've discovered two that are really good at that. One's called Tweets, and the other is called Twitterific. And no more tapping on the tweet, then tapping on the link, and then some of them even have a third thing where it has the preview and then you have to go out to Safari. Both of those apps, you just tap on the link and a pop-up comes up right within the Twitter client, and you're reading the article or reading the link, whatever it is. So Tweets is $1.99 or $2.99, and Twitterific has a free version that limits you to one account, and it has ads, and then it has a $4.99 pro version. So if that sounds interesting, you can try out the free version just to try it. So I'm still hoping that Twitter or Simply Tweet or some of the other more full-featured apps that I really like implement this feature. I think that's the future of Twitter clients. No more tapping on the tweet to have to do all these options. Just let me see it and do everything right from that one screen. So
that definitely does save you a ton of taps if a lot of your followers are always sharing links. I mean, that saves you a lot of time. Just a couple other notes right now for iPhone users who have been waiting for GPS apps to go on sale. Right now, two of the best apps, TomTom and Navigon, are both on sale in the App Store. Navigon, which is my favorite GPS app, it is the best out there. It's selling for $29.99. in Canada and $25 in the States, which I think is a real steal. And TomTom is selling, I think, for $39. But either way, I know both are on sale right now. Yes, TomTom is selling for $39.99, both on sale. If you've been waiting to buy, this is the time to pick it up.
Yeah, actually, hopefully these sales are still on by the time you listen to this podcast. Now would be a good time to get yourself to the App Store and pick up some apps you've been looking for, because a combination of Valentine's Day and the Verizon iPhone launch, a ton of things are on sale. Another app I was going to mention too, I already said I'm not that into games, but Capcom has all their games on sale right now for 99 cents, including some of their really high-end games that have never been on sale, like Devil May Cry and some of the Resident Evil games. And the one I downloaded yesterday and I'm just blown away with is Street Fighter 4. I am the biggest Street Fighter fan there's ever been. I fell in love with that game when it came out in the arcades. I bought every version there ever was on Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis. I was the geek who modded my Dreamcast so I could get the Japanese Street Fighter X imported. And I've kind of been tempted to buy it on the iPhone. It has really great reviews, but it's been $9.99. The lowest price they've ever put it down to is $6.99, but it's 99 cents right now. I downloaded it yesterday, and it's one of the best mobile versions of Street Fighter I've ever seen, and I cannot believe it's from the same company who released that Capcom arcade game, because if you downloaded that free Capcom arcade game, there's Street Fighter 2, two different Street Fighter games in there, and the controls are awful. They're limited. The laggy graphics, everything. It's just terrible. Street Fighter 4 plays like it's on your Xbox. The graphics animations are smooth. It's fast. And I mean, I can pull off all the special moves. I cannot believe it's the new gold standard for controls with a touchscreen device. And it has nothing but like 4 and 5 star reviews, which I was kind of skeptical of. But coming from someone who's played a lot of Street Fighter over the years, if you are into fighting games even a little bit, check out Street Fighter. It's 99 cents and well worth it.
Yeah, that 99 cents, wow. Because, I mean, before when this game was first launched, there was a lot of hype about it with a lot of Street Fighter fans. I used to play Street Fighter back in the day. I loved it. I even had, you know, one of those arcade controllers for my SNES. But 99 cents, wow. This used to be $9.99, like you mentioned, right?
I checked. Was it like the category? It was $9.99 most of the time, and the lowest it's ever gone is $6.99, and it's been near the top of the charts a lot of times, even at $6.99. So I was shocked that they finally included this in the 99 cents, and I grabbed it right away. I figured for 99 cents, being a Street Fighter fan, almost just to have it and try it, it was worth it. And then I was just, I've only played 2 or 3 games so far, but I've never, even on the PSP, which has an actual joystick, it was sometimes hard to pull off the move. They have somehow optimized it for the iPhone. Like, I'm, for those interested, I'm Ken. That's my main character, and just could pull off all the special moves with ease, and very impressive graphics, and just a steal of a deal at 99 cents. And again, if you're a fan of Street Fighter, or just in the mood to kind of try a fighting game, most of the fighting games have really sort of been terrible on the iPhone. This one, they've managed to pull it off. So check it out.
Right. They do have multiplayer. Is that only with Bluetooth, or is there an online multiplayer?
There's no online multiplayer that I know of, but I haven't tried that. If they had online multiplayer and could at all pull it off, that would be unbelievable. I cannot tell you the amount of time I spent. That's what's funny. Online gaming is so big right now. I go back online gaming back to the Dreamcast in 99, where I had it hooked up with a telephone modem. You had to hook it up to your phone line and you could play online games. And I just remember that being the most awesome part about that Street Fighter X you could play online. And then Xbox eventually got a Street Fighter game you could play online. And I can't tell you the amount of hours I wasted playing Street Fighter on Xbox. So if they add that to the iPhone, that might break my streak of saying I never play games on my phone. That would be killer. But right now I think it's Bluetooth only.
Right. Yeah. That's if they could get online, that'd be fun. We could be playing back and forth. Any other apps today?
I'll just quickly say this one is kind of a weird one, but it's free, so I think you should try it out. It's called Movie Cat. I just noticed that it was $4.99 and then it was free, so I checked it out, and it's like a movie trivia game, but it actually works really well. Like, it has a fun kind of interface and really kind of neat questions and a variety of these different type of questions and mix and match. And so if you're a movie fan at all, it's normally $4.99 and they have a light version, but the full version, Movie Cat, one word, is free right now. So you can grab that, and that's good. I got a couple others, but I'll save them for next week because they're a little more involved to describe. So I think we've given people plenty of apps to try out, and you can tune in next week for some more.
Exactly. One more I'd like to just talk a bit more about was Google Translate. I don't know if you had a chance to try this out, but it's pretty awesome because it does translations live through voice, and it's pretty fun. There's so many languages that you can translate, and it will read them back out. If you are going to travel and you have data, this is the app to get.
In English, and then it gives you the other, or you can like have a foreign movie playing and it can listen in and tell you what it's saying.
Can you say that part again? I missed it.
I'm just wondering, do you say something in English into it and then it gives you another language, or is it the opposite? Do you let it listen to a foreign language?
It can do both.
Oh, really?
Vice versa. It gives you text and audio. It's amazing.
That is incredible.
Yeah. So, but like we said, Google needs to somehow integrate all of these apps into one like mega app, because I'm sick of having 3 or 4 or 5 different Google apps in their own special folder. They really do need to integrate this into one app. It would just make it so much easier.
Well, even the main Google app, like when that came out, all you could basically do was search, and then it had this voice search, which was pretty cool. And then they updated it to include like Google Maps and Google Docs and all these things. And I was so excited. But then when you realize they're not really in the app. They're just links out to Safari. And then not only that, they don't even have a way to save your password. Like, as it, if at least I didn't have to put my password in each time and they could spit me off to that service and automatically log me in the Safari version, I could almost live with that. But I don't understand why they can't just have the Google app and have Google Latitude, Google Translate, Google Talk, Google Voice, say Google Docs and a couple other things, have it all just built into one app. And to me, that would just be the killer app. Like, right now,
yeah,
it's a little frustrating with all the, some things are built in, some things aren't. Some have native interfaces, some don't. I wish they would just kind of streamline. But again, that goes right back to that's why they're Google and that's why Apple's Apple. That's why I can't see ever switching to an Android phone, because it just never has that polish, that smoothness, and that heavy concentration on user interface that Apple does. Apple is the perfectionist who has to... everything to the font is thought out, and Google is the, oh, look at this is a cool idea, and just whip it out, and it's ugly and unintuitive, but it does these amazing things. I think that just kind of sums up where those two companies are.
Yeah. Okay, I think this week we've covered some apps and some of the relevant news that I think will be very interesting to you, our listeners. Once again, thank you for listening to the iPhone Podcast. As always, please rate us on iTunes. We value your feedback and we will respond to you personally. You can follow the show and provide feedback by visiting theiphonepodcast.com or by following us on Twitter. I'm located at twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada and Justin is located at twitter.com/JustinLuey. That's L-U-E-Y. Thanks again for listening to episode 26. And we will see you again next week on 27. Justin, any last words?
Nope. Just thanks again, everybody, for listening, most importantly, and the feedback. And if you do have any questions or comments or anything, you can also email me at justin@theiphonepodcast.com. And we appreciate it. Thank you.
By the next time we come back, if rumors are true, iOS 4.3 could be released. As rumors are, it's Valentine's Day. So it could be a nice surprise.
Hopefully that's the case, and we'll tell you all about it next week.
Thanks again, everyone.